Michael, why don't we start right out by telling the audience a little bit about your path to Choices?
I started the apparel industry in 1972 with a company called Barco of California. They've been around since 1929. They're still a very successful company. I became their national sales manager quickly, grew their business dramatically. In 1980, I was recruited by a company in Chicago, Illinois, by the name of Ottenheimer. I became their executive VP of sales and marketing. Stayed there for 2.5 years. When my contract was up, we returned back to Southern California, whence we were born and raised. And I became the executive vice president of sales and marketing for a company called Gals of California out of North Hollywood. I stayed with them until late 1989 when I decided that I could make more money for myself rather than other people. The grass looked greener on the other side of the fence at that time, so we started Choices in 1989. We grew our business dramatically in about 1984. We had 38 employees, 12 salespeople. I was on the board for the National Association for Professional Apparel Association, retailers and manufacturers. And I was traveling 2 weeks out of every month. And when I found that, this is a funny story actually, when the flight attendants on United and American knew me on a first name basis, I felt I was too familiar with airlines and I decided to change my lifestyle. So in 1994, we got rid of all of our salespeople, sized down to 7 people and reinvented ourselves, which I think is part and parcel to this interview today. And we became a service company. We still kept some of our uniform companies, and we still have them today. But we really wanted to service those people who had no experience in starting an apparel company. They had no place to go. They had no one to talk to. And I thought it was a niche that we wanted to satisfy, and I think we've done a very good job of it.
Well, Michael, that was a courageous decision. At the time, looking back on it, I'm sure you feel it was absolutely the right decision.
There's no question. The scrub industry came in. And the uniform retailers were selling 2 to 3 pieces of scrubs for every piece of uniform they sold in the past just to break even. So the sales efforts were much greater. Your stock keeping units were much greater, and the markups were much lower. I just felt that it was time to move on, and we could also sense that in 1994, with the economy the way it was then, not quite as bad now, but terms were becoming net never with some of our retailers, and that's not something I wanted to participate in.
Well, Michael, before we get too far, you know, you and I've talked, so I know what you're talking about, but tell us a little bit about the firm. I mean, Choices doesn't really give us a description of what it is that you do. Give us a rundown.
Well, we're fortunate enough to sell customers all throughout the entire United States. We've had customers in every state. We specialize in small, medium, and particularly startup companies in the apparel industry. If they have an idea, a product, be it a garment, being a bag, or whatever the case may be, they contact us. We'll make the first pattern. We'll make the prototype. We'll give them some advice on how to produce it, where to buy fabrics if need be, or trims, and help them get off the ground. We're actually their, in a sense, an arm of production for them, if you will. Also, we do a lot of consulting with the small and startup companies who might need some help as it pertains to marketing, which is really my background.
Okay.
We also offer services such as embroidery, screen printing, digital screen printing, cutting, sewing, pattern grading and marking, which is all computerized, which is a CAD system. And we also do die cutting. And the latest thing we're doing now is fulfillment shipping for some of our smaller customers who don't have a warehouse. They'd rather pay us a small stipend to warehouse it and ship it for them to go out and rent a warehouse or a place to go ahead and ship it. It's really more profitable for them to have us do that.
Okay. So, you know, we're at my favorite question for every guest that we have on the show, and that's, what particular experience or key business lesson have you learned through all of these years that you want to pass on to our audience?
Well, one thing I learned, I'm not so smart. You know, I thought in 1989 when I started my business, I knew A to Z about running a business. I thought I had the last answer and that I was going to make a lot of money for me and my family. The company that I used to work for, the owner's wife was very gracious to me once. She said, Michael, you don't understand that when you own a company, you work 24/7. I didn't quite identify with that. I do now very much so. And that's the one thing, if I could pass on to any of those people listening out there who are interested in starting a business, it's a full-time commitment. It's not a part-time gig, as some people might say. You have to work your business. you have to work 24/7, and you have to make a commitment to owning that business, because you have to do your payroll first. You have to do all your expenses first. You're the last person to get paid, usually. Those people who take their paycheck first before their employees don't last in business very long.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing the way people look at business owners and think because we tend to have a flexible schedule that we don't work full hours, when it's really just the opposite, as you're pointing out, isn't it?
Well, there's no question. I was at a sales meeting once with this company I worked for in North Hollywood. I was executive VP of sales and marketing. We had all of our salespeople there, and I was at a dinner, and I was sitting next to the owner's wife, the president's wife, and she said, you know, Don worked real hard. That was the owner of the company. And I said, well, he only works from 10 to 2 every day. How hard can that be? She says, you just don't understand. He works 24/7. And I didn't quite understand it, but I must tell you, my hat was off to her and any other entrepreneur out there who tries to make their business go. It's a huge commitment, not only emotionally, but it's a commitment financially as well. You have to take that into consideration, particularly in today's economy. There's not a lot of banks loaning money. You really have to have some sort of an ability to keep your own products going forward. Otherwise, you're not going to make it.
Well, I'm glad you made that point. You know, you've really built your business upon loyalty with your customer base. Can you kind of share with us what it is you've done to get that kind of loyalty from your customers?
I will tell you this. At one point, loyalty was a lot more available than it is now today, and I hate to be a doomsayer, but loyalty is based on the almighty dollar today. If somebody can save 10 cents on a product, they're going to go there because of the nature of the economy, and I truly understand that. Because of that, we've been reinvented ourselves. We no longer work on our standard margins. We now fit our pricing into the budget of our customers, because that's a loyalty learning factor in itself. We can't normally make the same money that we used to. Yes, our margins are down, but guess what? We still have business. My employees still have work. And that potential customer could conceivably grow into be a larger customer for us down the road. So we have to change our whole approach to business. And loyalty is a big portion of that. Loyalty is not bought, it's earned. And I will tell you right now, and I'll say this later, the most important loyalty I have is to my employees, because without them, I would not have a business. My employees are the key to the success of my business.
And what do you do, anything special to keep those employees happy? I mean, you know, we're dealing with a time when a lot of employees have had to change jobs. They've had to accept reduced working hours, maybe reduced pay, and even those that haven't are living sort of on the edge every week, wondering what's in store for them. So what have you done with your staff to make them feel like you really care?
Well, one thing, I treat my staff as an extended member of my family. Now, they may not agree with that statement, but that's the way I approach it, because they truly are. Their families depend upon my company's success to put a roof over their heads, clothes for their children, and food on their table. And without them and without me participating together, none of us are going to be successful. I trust my employees with keys to the business. If my employees say they want to do something within the business, I trust them until they prove themselves wrong. And it's worked very well. I have 4 employees that have been with me over 14 years. And that's quite an honor to me that they would stay, because I'm not the highest paying guy in town, because we're still a small company. But they appreciate the fact that I bend over backwards to help them. I've sponsored one of them to become a legal citizen. Now he's a citizen. 2 other people have become citizens since they've been employed by me. And I really admire them. They're what makes this country great. I really mean that. I am just so proud of those employees.
That's great. It's good to hear you say that.
It's true.
Go ahead.
One of the things I will tell you is the language issue for me has been difficult. I have not taken it upon myself to learn a foreign language. I understand some Spanish. But you know something? My employees have been over backwards to learn English. And well, they should, because we are in the United States. But they've tried so hard to assimilate themselves. And I must tell you, it's such a rewarding experience for me. I can't tell you enough how proud I am of these people.
Well, I think you are telling us, so that's great. Tell me a little bit. You said, you know, you built your business really on startups. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, what happens is, let's say a company comes to me and they have an idea for a better widget or an apparel in this situation, and they'll bring us a sketch or a sample, and I sit down and talk with them, with my staff, my CAD room manager, and my projects manager, and we look at the product and we tell them what is needed to go forward, how much it's going to cost them, and so forth. And they have a choice whether they want to make that effort to go forward. If they make that choice, then our library of resources is wide open to them. I don't charge them for that. Those 37, 38 years of experience I have, I refer them to any of the vendors that I have. I help them with pricing and costing. We want them to be successful, because if they're not successful, my efforts have gone in vain. We truly want our customers to be successful, but it doesn't always work that way, but we give it every effort to try to make them successful. Unfortunately, there are some customers out there that know far more than I do, even though they've never been in the business. And quite honestly, you can tell when you sit down with a lot of people if they're going to be back the next day or in business the next month.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious. Michael, can you give us kind of a rundown? I mean, when a customer walks in, I mean, what is it that you do for them? I mean, you know, you do far more than just cut and sew and send them the goods. I mean, you're involved right at the front end, aren't you?
Yes, it's kind of funny. When people come in, they say, well, what do you need from me? And I said, well, you know something, one thing I want to tell you, and I say this to every customer, you're not reinventing the wheel. The only original garment was a fig leaf. Everything's a knockoff. And that kind of gets them at ease, because they're very nervous sometimes coming in, because they're not sure they know the right questions to ask or the right answers if I ask the question. So they understand that they're not reinventing the wheel. This is not brain surgery. This is taking a garment, putting their love and attention to it and their marketing approach and building a business. We try to help them with that. We tell them what's best for them. We try to help them find a way to produce it at a more competitive price by changing the construction of the garment if need be. However, there are people who say, look, I don't really care about the construction. I want it to look just like this. I don't care if it costs more. And we give them what they want. Ultimately, it's their choice. But we'll make a pattern, we'll make a prototype, and then we'll make a sample once they approve the prototype. Once the sample's approved, we'll go in and grade, which means the size is up or size down. Then we'll make a marker. The marker is what you use to cut the material based on the width and how many pieces they're cutting. Then we'll cut it, we'll sew it, we'll embroider it or screen print it, embroider it with a dye, dye cut if necessary. We also do applique. So we do the whole gamut under one roof. Our latest project is now digital screen printing, which is direct-to-garment printing from a JPEG or a GIF, and that's a wonderful aspect of our business.
Wow, that sounds like it's going to have a huge impact on the whole business.
We certainly hope so. It's a big thing in the industry today. And we're using it on a smaller basis, certainly, because if we can do some screen printing without having to charge a setup cost of screens and films and so forth, it's a lot more effective. And it, quite frankly, it comes out very nicely, too, from a JPEG. It's beautiful work.
Okay. So give me a sense of the size orders that you're willing to be involved in.
It's funny you ask that, Doug. I tell everybody that call me, they ask what your minimum is. And let me back into the answer real quick. Usually sure. They say they want to produce 800 to 1,200 pieces because they think that's what they want to hear. And I tell them my minimum is one piece. I'll produce one piece for a customer. Now, they're going to pay through the teeth for that. Let's be very clear about that. It's far more expensive. But I'd rather see a customer who comes in and said they want to do 1,000 pieces to do 250 pieces with me. The reason being is that other 750 pieces on the shelf is not going to mean anything to them if they can't sell it. It's not going to create more value. It's going to drop in value. I'd rather see them pay an extra dollar or two and produce less and have money to produce more down the road. We can always get a reduced price when they do larger volume later on. But right now, let's be lean and mean so you can come back to the well and drink some more.
And how's the internet impacting your business, Michael?
Glad you asked, Doug. I should have brought that up. We started the Choices website, which is www.choicesapparel.com, about 7 or 8 years ago. It's my single biggest selling portion of my business, maybe next to myself. But if you go in, if you put private label apparel in Google, we're listed number one. And that tells you something right there. And we don't pay for that. That's just a listing that comes through the proper meandering through the websites and being able to handle our own website well with the keywords and meta tags. So we get emails every day with potential new customers from all over the United States. We've had customers in Great Britain, in Germany, South America, a lot in Canada. So the website is a really meaningful tool for me. I can't impress upon you how wonderful it is. In fact, we're in the process now of redoing our website, not totally, but changing some of the words on it, some of the pictures, because some of them become outdated. And that's another thing we have to do constantly is try to do a better job of updating our website. That's one area that I failed in, quite honestly.
Okay. So what do you think? You know, I mean, your business, to the unknowledgeable person like myself, I'm kind of surprised to find your business being done in the United States. I mean, I think of it as a fairly labor-intensive business, which those kind of businesses seem to be more and more being shipped offshore. Can you kind of respond to that?
I certainly can, because that's been our biggest problem. I shouldn't say ours, the entire industry, the apparel industry's biggest problem has been the outsourcing of production to third world countries. And there's no secret to that. It's in a lot of industries. And there's nothing we can do to combat that. In California, we have the highest minimum wage of any state in the United States. Workman's comp is high. Liability insurance is high. Rents are higher here. So we have to fight that battle here every day, and if we have to compete with the people offshore, we're not going to be successful. That's why I've made my marketing plans to deal with the small and medium-sized companies who can't afford to go offshore. Not everybody can afford to go offshore, and that is the key for me. There's not another company in the United States, by the way, Doug, that specializes in startup companies in the apparel industry. We're the only one. I've never heard of anybody else. When people find us, they're shocked that that's what we specialize in.
Well, I am too. I'll tell you, it surprised me the first time you and I met. I heard you say that. I thought, well, I must have heard wrong.
It's a lower volume, but I must tell you, it's a very rewarding thing for me emotionally. At my age, it's almost like being a teacher. I love to see customers successful. And quite frankly, we're not perfect. We make mistakes like everybody else. And there's another thing that happens is people outgrow us because they hire their own production manager. They feel they can find a price better, or they go offshore. We can go offshore, too, and we do have some production offshore in some of the bags that we do. But quite frankly, the best thing that we can do for our customers is try to stay small and help those people who need us. To try to go after the big guys doesn't serve me any purpose, because I could be out of business with them the next day anyway.
And you know, you bring up an interesting point when you talk about loyalty to a customer is recognizing the fact that there may be a time when that you aren't the best person to service the customer. And what can you do to help them, you know, move
that
on?
That happened. Usually when that happens, though, I must tell you, Doug, customers are somewhat embarrassed to broach that subject. They just move on, and they say, well, we're going elsewhere. They don't want to address it. It's not because they're angry at me, but they feel that it's going to hurt my feelings. Does it hurt my business? Yes, if we lose a customer, certainly, but there's always a new customer behind them that'll take their place, maybe not as much volume. But you know something, they should never have to apologize for growth. That's why I'm here. That's why they're there. We want to make this business together. We want to grow a business. And quite frankly, I value those success stories as much as anything else. I could give you a list of a half a dozen companies that are successful out there. They're big name companies that started with us. And had started with some big name people. So we're happy for those people to grow. We don't want to lose the business, but there's a point in time when we can no longer handle their needs because of they want to get better pricing, they have a full-time production manager, and they want to go offshore. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's part of business growth.
Okay. So you're constantly reinventing your business, it sounds like.
Yes, we are. My wife and I have a passion for dogs. As you know, when you came, you saw that our dog is with us. We've always brought our dogs for the last 19 years to work with us. We've had three sets of dogs, three different dogs now in our business. And we're now going after our next goal is to go after the dog business. We have a line, and you and I haven't discussed this. Maybe I did tell you this. We have a name called www.trustfundpet.com. And that started with the Leona Helmsley issue a few years ago when she left $12 million to her dogs. Well, now it's now legal in, I believe, 30 states in the United States to have trust fund for your pet. So we took the name trustfundpet.com, and that's something we're going to do with we're going to offer pet products. We've made a lot of donations to a variety of different animal shelters for dogs, particularly the Michael Vick type dogs. It's really important to us to pay back in that area because our dogs have been so important to us. So that's our next growth. We're reinventing ourselves there. It's not taken off yet. We're just starting, but that's our next growth. But we're still going to know who our main basic customer is, and that's the small and startup companies that we deal with every day.
Well, I'm glad you clarified that. I didn't realize that was your dog. I thought it was a small horse you had there in the office.
Well, he's a big one. Yes, he is.
He's a big one guy.
He's a rescue dog.
So what changes do you see happening in your industry as you look down the road, peering in the crystal ball here as we are?
The changes that I see down the road is business is going to get better, Doug, regardless of what anybody says. It's irregardless of who's in the administration right now. It will get better. Those of us who are old enough to remember in the 90s and the 80s when the economy got bad and interest rates went up high, we said, woe is me, woe is me. Well, guess what? We came out of that famously well. And that will happen again. I think the difference now is It's a little bit more invasive because it's throughout the entire world. It's just not with our own individual economy. And that's not something any of us can individually control. All we can do is try to fight through it. But I think the biggest change coming down the road is business will get better sometime in 2010. And I think in the apparel industry, I think you're seeing a little bit more of the apparel industry coming back to the States because the high-end market still is strong here. It's the low-end market that's offshore for the most part.
Okay, okay. Well, Michael, what else about your firm did you want to talk about today that we haven't really mentioned that I haven't asked you about? Anything else you want to add?
Well, the only thing I will say, and I thought very hard and long about this when you and I originally talked, I think when you start a business, you must remember inspiration is a great tool. That you need that towards success. But if you don't have perspiration, you're not going to make it. And I will caution anybody out there that wants to start a business, it isn't easy. You have to work it every single day. And I will tell you another thing. Don't let anybody else tell you that they'll take care of you. Don't let them put in all states' hands like the old commercial. Make everything that's done something that's part of your life and you know what's going on. Because if you don't, you're not learning. I tell my customers, we make mistakes. There's no such thing as a problem. All there is a potential solution. And I think that's true with work. I think that's when you start a business, you have to work hard. Remember, there's going to be mistakes, but there's always a solution out there.
That's great. You know, and that's from the first time I met you, Michael. That's one of the things I really enjoy is your positive attitude about what's going on and the perspective that, hey, we've been through it before. We'll be through it again and stick around and it'll change.
It has to get better. And quite frankly, I'm in it for the long term. And I know you are, too. And I know that your listeners are. They wouldn't be listening if they didn't think their business was long term.
Absolutely. Absolutely. How does someone get in touch with you or learn more about your firm?
Well, they can go to our website at www.choicesapparel.com, or they can call me at 714-375-6516, or they can even reach me via email at michael.t@choicesapparel.com. We'd be anxious to hear from anybody who has interest in starting a business or really wants to chat about the small business what's going on in small business today. I value those relationships as well.
Michael, thank you very much for being with us today and being so open about your business and about your passion for startup businesses.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity to share my experience, and I hope that if one person out there becomes successful because of a few things I had to say, then I've done my job. And thank you so much for giving me the forum.
Great. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, here we are on Critical Mass, the radio show, broadcasting on OrangeCountyTalkRadio.net, Orange County's newest talk radio show, and soon to be, or maybe it already is, the best. I'm Doug Gefeller. I'm your host for today's show. And while we're getting our next guest on the line, let me just add that my partner, Rick Franzi, and I are business owners, just like many of you listening today. And we've been creating and facilitating CEO peer groups for 15 years here now in Orange County. Wow, that went by fast. All under the banner of Renaissance Executive Forums. That's www.executiveforums.com. These forums are the opportunity for you to meet with like-minded business executives and work on problems that are common to all businesses today. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you that I'm quite proud of my partner Rick Franzi's achievement. This last year, he wrote his first book, the definitive book on CEO peer groups with the same title as this radio show, Critical Mass. I highly recommend that you add it to your reading list, and you can find it on Amazon.com. Just put in Rick Franzi. That's RICFRANZI under author. It'll take you right to it. You know, in addition to executive forums and the radio show, we also offer executive coaching services, employee development programs, and facilitate strategic planning sessions for our clients. I've been a member of the International Coach Federation and a master certified coach for 14 years, and I'm the immediate past president of the Orange County chapter of the ICF. And you can learn more about our coaching practice on our website, www.criticalmass4forbusiness.com. Well, it's with a great deal of pleasure that I welcome our next guest, Rachel Pradom, one of the owners of Blaze Interactive, a leading company in social media marketing. Rachel, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. And You know, Rachel, you've set a new first for our radio show, and I think it's absolutely sort of says a lot about your commitment to social media marketing. When we were arranging the interview with Rachel, we said, now we need to be sure to call you on a landline so you won't have to come into the studio. And she said, we don't own a landline. So there we are. Rachel, it's great to talk to you again today. Rachel presented to one of our executive forums this morning, and it was extremely well received. And every time I hear it, I learn, and so did our guests. So, Rachel, why don't you start out by telling us about your path to Blaze Interactive?
Sure. And again, thank you, Doug, for having me on today. Well, our company, Blaze Interactive, was started, it'll be 4 years, actually, in March. And we got started, my husband and I, after we had won several design awards in three different design areas. That's interior design, graphic design, and web design. And we collaborated on each of these competitions. And we were actually able to win each time that we entered a competition. And we won some money along with that. And we decided, you know, it was so great to work together as not just as a husband and wife, but as a real partnership in creating these designs, that we decided to take the money that we had won and use that to start our business. And that, again, was 4 years ago this month.
How long ago was that? That's wonderful, Rachel. Well, okay, let's get right into it. Talk about Blaze Interactive and what it is that you do.
Well, we work with small businesses in Orange County that are looking to expand their marketing reach. A lot of, you know, traditional advertising and marketing just isn't working anymore. The filters are turned on, as it were, for consumers. So a lot of small businesses are looking to different areas to market, and the internet is a great way to do that. So they start with a website, and then we build from there. So whether it's blogging, online video, and social media marketing, such as LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, we help them strategize how to use each of these basically strategies, tactics, in order to achieve their business goals.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Rachel, you have probably more company names and website addresses and that than anybody I know. Is there a specialty that you have?
Well, we do work a lot with the service industry. We do also work a lot with coaches and speakers as well. I did say that we work in Orange County, but a lot of our clients are actually international as well, as local to Orange County here. So, but mostly it is service-based.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to catch you on that. You just told the group you talked to this morning about the client you have from, if I remember right, Australia, that found you through the internet.
That's very true, yes.
So that's certainly beyond Orange County. Well, mm-hmm. You know, one of my favorite questions that I like to ask our guests is to share with our audience one particular experience or business lesson that you've learned that you really think is key. And what would that be for you?
Well, for us, I think it's when we got started with our business, we thought we could do everything at once. And what we quickly learned was that everything is actually in increments. Baby steps, as a lot of people would say. And so not to of course, have a vision, a big picture, but then to break it down into baby steps so that you can actually get to that point, and to not get frustrated when you do have to take so many steps in order to get there. So if and really it's not just in, say, marketing, but it's like in networking, if you have a project, everything has to be put into small bite-sized pieces so that we can actually attain those goals.
You know, that's great advice. As a coach, I find many of the clients that I work with are frustrated, and they're frustrated usually with their lack of productivity, their lack of focus. And when we look at it, the problem really isn't their lack of productivity or focus. The problem is their goals are too big. They haven't broken them down into manageable pieces. And that's exactly what I hear you saying. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your first year in business. You know, like most startups, it was a challenging year. What did you learn from that that made your second year better?
Well, when we were in school, my husband and I, we went to school for design, obviously, and they don't really teach you very much about business and how to run one when you actually do have the opportunity to start one. So we had to learn pretty hard some of the business things like accounting and things like that. And one thing that we did that really changed in the second year of business was that we decided to hire a business coach. At the time, I didn't even know what coaching was, but we decided after having one consultation or coaching session with this coach that she would be able to see the kind of holes in our business and be able to help us to find the solutions for them, ones that we would come up with ourselves because of the coaching model. And ever since then, we have seen a great increase in our business and our success. And because of that, we have not gone, you know, a month without having a business coach on our side to help us achieve the kind of goals that we're looking for and be able to talk out any kind of issues that happen to crop up.
You know, let me just share with the audience, too, that Rachel's so committed from her personal experience with coaching that she serves on the board of the Orange County chapter of the ICF and has done wonders for our local coaching community here in Orange County. So let me just thank you for that publicly here, Rachel.
Well, thank you, Doug. Coaching is really an industry that I think a lot of people should take advantage of. They can really help you to achieve your goals, and it's something that I want to help coaching to market a little better.
That's true. Just like you said, so many people learn their discipline, but they don't learn how to run a business. They don't know how to do the accounting. They don't know how to do the marketing. And that's what brings us to social media marketing, your favorite topic. What can you tell us about it?
Well, social media marketing, how we got into it was that we had to figure out a way to market our business, especially in the first couple of years. You know, we didn't have a lot of money that we could put towards marketing. So we have to think of what are some other ways that we can market our business. And networking is a natural, you know, you go to networking groups and things like that. But social media marketing kind of takes that one step further. You're not just networking in your local area now, you're networking on a global scale. So whether it's on LinkedIn or Facebook, Twitter, and really there's many others, it's about networking and building those relationships so that you can have a stronger brand, and thus people will be automatically, you know, magnetism will come into effect and people will start using your business and services. And that's how we were able to really market our business. So we decided to help other small businesses in being able to do that as well. So learning how to contribute to the conversation through online video and blogs, and then how do you have networking basically through LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and really it comes down to having strategies. So what is your strategy for each of those networks, and what are your goals, and how are we going to attain those through those networks?
So, okay, so that's how you grew, by getting into social media marketing, a result of maybe not having enough money to do it the traditional way and finding out that the non-traditional was really even more effective. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about what social marketing really is and how it applies to business. You know, so many people think social media marketing is telling everybody on Twitter what I had for lunch or posting pictures of their kids on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And it's so much more than that. Come on, give us a little rundown.
Well, in a nutshell, let's say, social media marketing is a lot more than saying what you had for lunch and posting up photos. Although Facebook is one of the largest photo sharing sites on the internet, so photo sharing is great on Facebook. However, it really is about networking and marketing. And a lot of businesses, especially small businesses, build through referrals. So referral marketing and that word of mouth marketing. And you can actually track that kind of marketing through social media. In traditional ways, when people referred to you, you weren't able to actually track that and increase the referrals. But with social media, you can actually do that. So you can see, you can perhaps suggest a different kind of service that you offer on Twitter, and you let some of your biggest fans on Twitter know about this new service, and you ask them, can you help me to kind of publicize this? So they might tweet it once or twice for you, but each time that they tweet it, they're sending it to their entire network, and that could be thousands of people. And so and you're able to actually track when people click from that person's profile or that person's tweet and comes to your website, and you're able to get that kind of business. So it's a really trackable word-of-mouth referral-based marketing.
Well, that's a good start. What I heard you saying really is that maybe the most important thing in getting into social media marketing is to have a strategy right from the beginning.
Right, right. Having that plan of action and then doing it every day. A lot of people think I just get on Twitter and I spam my followers about all the products and services that I have. But really, it's not about that. It's about either marketing or customer care, letting people, being the filter to your audience about industry news. It depends on the strategy and your business model of how you use these different networks.
Okay. And Rachel, can you give us sort of a quick rundown on just give us the names of some of the most popular social media marketing tools and in a thumbnail, tell us where you think they're the appropriate places to use those?
Sure. Well, as far as the networks are concerned, if you're looking for business-to-business type, if you are a business that works with other businesses, then LinkedIn and possibly Facebook would be a good avenue for you. Twitter is one of those that is good for either consumer-based businesses or business-based. And as far as the tools that are concerned, as far as tracking results and things like that, one is Bitly, that's bit.ly, also budurl.com. These two sites will actually be able to track when you post links and things like that to your profile or you tweet it out, you're actually able to track the clicks that of when and where people are coming to your site from those links. So you're actually able to track that. And then having Google Analytics on your website is, of course, important. Other softwares that you might want to be aware of is ping.fm, that's ping.fm. Also, Digsby, that's digsby.com. These two softwares, one is a software, Digsby is a software you can actually download onto your computer, and ping.fm is a website that you can use. These two sites will enable you to have one location that you can contribute to the conversation, interact with people on the various networks from one place. So for Digsby, it'll be this desktop application, and for ping.fm, it's either the website itself, or it might be your handheld, like your BlackBerry or your iPhone. You can actually broadcast out to all the networks from one place if you have these accounts.
Okay, so that what you're saying is that, you know, while I may be using various sites, various programs for my social media marketing, that there are tools out there that let me consolidate and sort of write or post on one and then blast it out to all the rest. Do I have that right?
That's right. Exactly.
And you know, one of the things that we heard today when you were presenting to the executive forum group was the concern about, well, how much time is this going to take? You know, I have a real job. What do you expect me to do, Rachel? Can you react to that a little bit?
Sure. Well, I think a lot of people have this question because they see some people just become obsessed with social media, and so they just go to the other extreme and say, I'm not going to do it at all then. But it's good to have a balance. So scheduling in time that you do go on online and you, for instance, have a strategy, yet again, having that strategy to either go on LinkedIn and answer a question in the question and answer area, or I'm going to go to Facebook and I'm going to interact with three people, or I'm going to go to Twitter and I'm going to search for certain keywords like small business, for example, and then reply to people's conversations about small business. So you have a strategy in place for each of these networks, and then you say, this is how much time I'm going to do it each day. So maybe it's 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes in the evening. Whatever it is, you stick to that schedule. So just like some coaches might recommend that you don't, you know, be attached to your email all the time and getting messages all the time, because that can be distracting. It's the same thing for social media. Don't be distracted from your real work. Think of it as marketing or customer care when it comes to social media, and schedule that in.
So, Rachel, if I was brand new to this and was to start out using some of the social media marketing tools today, mm-hmm. when would I expect some kind of return, and can I measure an ROI on my activity?
Well, you definitely can track results. The two websites that I had mentioned, Bitly, B-I-T-L-Y, and BudURL, you're able to track some people, you know, where people are clicking from and how did they get to your website. Google Analytics is another way for you to track results, seeing where people come from and then how long do they stay on your site when they get there. That way you can change your marketing based on, you know, if people are coming from LinkedIn, for example, and they stay on your site longer than the people from Facebook, you might want to focus your attention on LinkedIn. But as far as return on investment, or on time, I should say, it really comes down to how many interactions do you have. If you go to any of these websites, for example, Facebook, and you have a fan page on Facebook, they don't track how much you sell through Facebook, but rather how many interactions do you have. Because social media really isn't just about selling stuff. It is about having interactions, building those relationships. When you go to networking events, you don't expect to sell a bunch of products when you shake somebody's hand. You expect to build a relationship that will eventually lead to selling products or services. So when you're tracking results, you should think about how many times was I able to touch a prospect or a current client, and building those brands and relationships.
What a great way to put it. Thank you for making that so much more clearer to me. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, you hit on a point that made me realize, you know, we always look at return on investment. Most of the time we're thinking of money. Mm-hmm. And yet social media marketing is more a commitment of time, really, more so than the money. And if I was going to spend a lot of money, obviously I would have a strategy before I went out and started spending it. But we tend to just jump on these internet tools without having a strategy, and then we spend our most precious commodity, which is our time. Mm-hmm. So I think your idea of the strategy is absolutely right and maybe really key there. Mm-hmm. What do you see as the changes that are coming down the road? I mean, take out your crystal ball and tell us what's going to be different about social media marketing a year from now.
Well, it's a little hard to say, but from what I've put my ear out there on a regular basis to see what is coming down the pipeline as far as social media is concerned. And a lot of people are saying that we're going to see a lot of consolidation. You know, a lot of us just use Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, but there's a lot of other social networks out there. And we're going to see the bigger networks kind of merge with the smaller ones. We're also going to see a lot of cross-platform. So Twitter might start working with LinkedIn, and LinkedIn might look more and more like Facebook, but still keeping that business and corporate identity. So we're going to see a lot of kind of interaction that way. And as we're also going to see a lot more applications for these networks. So for example, Twitter, it's just microblogging, so real-time kind of chat room feel to it. However, there are many websites and applications out there that use Twitter in other ways. So, for example, being able to find businesses through Twello, they use Twitter so that it's like a yellow pages for Twitter, and it's called Twello.com. And there's many other services out there that actually just use Twitter in order to make a new product. So I think that's a lot of what we're going to see as well.
Okay. That's obviously exciting for all of us, especially for you who are making a living off of this.
Mm-hmm.
But, as we look at where this is really going, can you talk a little bit? I don't want to put you on the spot here. I've already asked you a whole bunch of questions we never talked about, so I'll just explain that to our audience. Not that anybody could tell. You seem to have the answer to all of them. But, you presented some very interesting statistics about the face of the people on the social media today. Can you share a couple of those with our audience?
Oh, sure. Actually, I do have it right here. Just hold on 1 second, and I'll bring that up. So I do have some great statistics in relation to Twitter, for example. So in the month of June of this year, 10% of all internet usage was on Twitter. That's a lot of internet usage for one particular website. And 64% of Twitter users are between the ages of 25 and 54. And 20% of them are over the age of 55. So that's just for Twitter. And there are some other great statistics that I actually pulled from socialnomics.net. They have a great little video there, and they also have a wonderful book that I would recommend. One of them is in the year 2010, so next year, the Gen Y population will actually outnumber the baby boomers, and 98% of them have already joined a social network.
Wow.
Yeah. And there was also one where a university stopped sending out emails because a lot of the newcomers, the freshmen, didn't use email. So we're seeing a big shift, in this younger population from going away from email and that kind of now tradition, what we consider traditional ways of communicating, and we see them using social media to communicate versus like email and phone calls. It's all about texting and Twitter and Facebook and other social applications.
And you made an interesting observation this morning when we were talking as a group, and the comment was made, how many people in the room could get by without email?
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't a single person that thought they could. And we're looking at what's happening with social media and wondering if a few years down the road, we aren't going to be saying the exact same thing about social media.
I think so. I think a lot of people are going to move on to social media and start using that a lot more than email. Email is, I don't know about you, Doug, but I certainly get a lot of spam. And certainly with social media, I do get a little bit of spam, but so far the filters are much better than the email filters that I have. So I prefer social media over emails any day.
Okay. Maybe one of the last questions here, or one of the last couple of questions, Rachel, one of your favorite topics seems to be video. Talk about the impact of video on social media.
Well, video streaming, video, people watching video has gone up, like, I think the statistic was something like 2,000% in the last few years. And more people are going, you are going to see a lot more video and people using video. And the reason is because it's so easily available for us to record now. With flip cameras and the Kodak VI8 and VI6, we're easily able to put a video camera into our back pocket and whip it out whenever we need to take some video or a testimonial of somebody using our product or service. And we're going to see a lot more of that consumer videos of people reviewing products and services as well. I mean, it's already out there, but you're going to see it a lot more. So if you don't already have a flip camera or some sort of easy access camera, then I would definitely recommend that you invest in that. It's only about $200.
Great. Well, Rachel, what else should I have asked you, or is there something else you'd like to talk about as we sort of wrap this up that we haven't touched on today?
I think we touched on a lot. I mean, we talked about video, your website, blogging, social media. There's a lot out there that we can do to market ourselves on a regular basis.
Okay. And the last question, how does someone get in touch with you or learn more about your firm?
Well, you can go to our website, blazeinteractive.com, and all the contact is on there. My phone number is 714-566-4669, as well as all the links to the social media applications. So I hope that all of you will connect with me there.
Great. Rachel, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today. Thank you for making a very sometimes complex, maybe sometimes scary, geeky subject very down to earth and easy to understand. And again, thank you for all you do for our community here in Orange County.
Well, thank you. It was my pleasure.
All right. Great. Well, that wraps up another day here on Critical Mass, the radio show, broadcasting on octalkradio.net. Thank you very much for joining us today. We are broadcasting on a regular basis on our new schedule, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, and I invite you to listen between 4 and 5, and wishing that all of your decisions be good decisions. Thank you.
You've been listening to Orange County's best business station, octalkradio.net.